KD4SRR with a follow-up. I know the net's over, but this is some information I got from the GSP skywarn.org webpage. Over. The information that I have from the GSP skywarn.org webpage is the primary is the 145.470 repeater, K90H. But this one, 146.610, is listed as the secondary. And also 146.820 as a tertiary. It's also linked with one in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, 145.230. PL118.8. The other two repeaters, obviously the one we're talking on, are toneless. But more updates are coming. So that's the latest from the GSP part of the skywarn.org. This is KD4SRR monitoring.
And that's good that I'll find those links, but you
you know what's bad about that is in case one of the links is down that you need, I need to find a way to get into that repeater. And I might have to set me up a duplexer and a dedicated radio. Well, I could set this Yazoo up and get me another radio, I guess. But set me up a beam or something to hit the primary one in case the other ones, something happens to them or the link system or what have you. Now, the way they look at this thing, they, of course, on a cell phone, it looks like you gotta zoom it. But they got four areas in the state. And the one over toward the beach is actually considered part of the Wilmington, North Carolina area. But we're the largest, well, no, right below us, up to Newberry and Fairfield and Lancaster is the biggest. That's the peak area, and we're the second largest, with Chester and York and all of them. So I'll try to see if I can find something here. The whole system is out of Silver Spring, Maryland. And I'm clicking on it. And let's see. Free and open, how to become an NWS. They've already had their training session. It was in March. But let's see. You have to go through the Aries areas, and one's in Pickens, and one's in Union County, but I don't know if that's Union County, North Carolina, or South Carolina.
LZI 4, I'm not sure about that said, but I know for sure you can take it online if you have to, but when they're going to do the next in person, if you say, I don't know.
Online is if your cell tower gets whacked, well, you ain't online. So, they said if you have any questions about the National Weather Service Greenville Spartanburg, South Carolina Sky Worn Storm Spotter Program, let me take a breath after that. Please contact Tricia Palmer at Tricia.Palmer@NOAA.gov. So, anyway, that's the latest info they have. Or you could just submit a online storm report. They ain't got a twister. It's on the ground 5 minutes. That storm report ain't going to help you much. But, so it goes.
This is going to last this pack, but this Shane 08 lives down in the Anderson area. And like Mark was saying earlier, there's that lead on that section, which 47 is linked to those sections at 7:30 Tuesday and 3rd. And every chance I get, I try to check into it myself. So, but if you find one of those link machines, you might be able to get into one of them better than you can here to find me.
I just had that with a little Aries net. I can get into Edgefield, although it's noisy on my receive end. They can hear me better getting into Edgefield. But I can hear better on Columbia, but they can't hear me. So, go figure.
Like I said, it's going to get close to being dead, but when I've got a good pack in this 86 here, I can go right up to you in the yard and get in that 145.47. Just for this 86, but there again, I'll live right here under season dead, so it's not an issue for me.
Well, I hit that thing one time, and I haven't been able to hit it sense. I ain't moved nothing on this J-pole. But maybe I got to kick it up higher in the air, but knock on wood where it is, it ain't blowed over. And I don't want to get up at my power lines, and if I go up much higher, I'm just going to be in tree branches, and that ain't going to be no good. So we'll figure out something here. But I'll keep looking. But like I said, the only radio I have with any wattage at all ain't that much, and that's that little QYT I got out in the car. Like I said, if it can hit, well, heck, I can hit Little Mountain with Bofang over here. But anywho, we'll keep checking, and when I find out something, I'll spread the news. This is KD4SRR.
Trouble getting into 4-7, but 6 water systems all around me too. So it ain't really a big issue for me, but down there where you are, I'm guessing either some of the Anderson UHF machines or that UHF machine in Columbia probably would be your best bet. As far as finding one that you can get a good signal, that's just my guess. Almost all the time, certainly if you're in. Just keep checking, okay? I4LZ, I4.
We'll just keep checking it, like I said. Now, what would be good for me is if it was hooked into that Spartanburg machine, 7315. Man, I can just almost yell out the window, and that machine will pick me up. It's super strong, and it goes everywhere. But I don't think it's linked into anything like that. But I'll have to double check. Well, anyway, I appreciate everything, all the information. And like I said, I'll be up running around here for a good late time. I'm going to be monitoring the choo-choo trains. They get busy on Sunday night. I like listening just for the heck of it. Listen to the trains leaving the yards and them hollering and carrying on when something don't go right. One breaks down. So, I'll be up, and so keep monitoring if you're awake, and we'll get back on here. Thanks again. This is KD4SRR Robert down in Joanna. We'll be around about and clear for now. 73s.
Spartanburg 147-325 ain't linked into this system over here as far as I know. I've never heard anybody say that one thing, so that's okay. I4LZ.
Roger. Now, sometimes you get into Charlotte with that one, and then they got that 220 that just went up. It's all brand spanking new, and I'm going to get me a 220 antenna next week. I'm going to be curious to see if I can hit that. And I know that's not real popular for a lot of folks that don't have tri-bands, but that's one good thing about this little QYT. And allegedly, it puts out more power on 220 than it does on either 440 or 2 meter. So that might be an option, too. I might ask them about that. I don't guess there's any feuds going on, is there, that you know of?
Aware of some 220 repeaters over here, but where does it do you any good? I doubt it. There's a 224-14-6 head. 24-4 a 224-4 on lots of mountain outside of Pinkton, and a 224-4-50 that's up there in the Spartanburg area. But how many of them you can hit, I don't know.
What I was told by some of the Spartanburg folks that when 220 got up running with the new setup, of course it's on top of Mary Black Hospital, I think. So it's up in the air, but it's not, you know, way up in the air. That it should be accessible. And that when it was up before, it was right busy. But we'll see. Like I said, I know I can get into 7315 on 2 watts. It ain't the best signal, but I can get into it, and on 5 watts, it's almost perfect. Over.
LZI portal. There's a, I can't remember what the exact frequency. But there's a couple of 220 repeaters up in North Carolina on Mount Pisgah and Mount Mitchell. But being where I'm at, Caesars had blocked me. I can't hear them. So that's really all I can tell you about it.
Roger that, and I heard or was told about a month ago that the 220 got moved off Mount Mitchell. They moved it more up toward Virginia for more reasons than just, well, I think they were getting some traffic out of Virginia, and they weren't getting much up on the mountain anyway, and they put it down there for some reason. It served a local area better, but I can neither confirm nor deny that. That's just what I was told. Over.
Picking repeaters up where I'm at, Caesars had blocks from me, and I can't hear them. So you know probably more about them than I do in this case.
What? I don't try to climb. As far as Caesars head, I'll stand on the ground and look up at it and say that's pretty. I hate going up that road. I don't like mountain driving much anyway, and of course this little Toyota's got a lot of miles and on it, but I made the mistake of going up there. It was February, but it had been clear that day, and I got about halfway up and an ice storm started. About where that little trinket souvenir stand or whatever it is up there before you get about halfway. And I turned around, and it was a little squishy and swervy getting back down. I never did make it to the peak. So last time I was up there, I was probably 9 years old before that. I don't go that route much. And but it's nice to know that this transmitter's there.
The one here that we're talking on is up on the big WYFF tower. This one here is, and it's up on the 450-foot level of the 1,000-foot WYFF TV tower up there. This one here is.
Graphical, so it's on top of 3,400 feet and then up another, well, somewhere on the 1,000-foot tower then, right?
Foot tower, but it's at the 450-foot level on the 1,000-foot tower.
Well, I can pick up this repeater better than I can do WYF Channel 4. That signal must shoot over me. I get them about half the time. Of course, that's digital TV. That's a whole nother weird thing there. I think they direct their signal more into North Carolina, into the western North Carolina market. There's more money there, and we're all pulled down here in Lawrence County for the most part. I guess they figure we can just buy cable, but I get a signal about once or twice a week, and then it fades out. I used to get it all the time with snow when it was analog, but not anymore.
Well, digital is compared to analog. In general, analog's going to cut through a lot of times, but digital won't.
Pins and twists and hugs the ground and just goes where it wants to go. And I found that out with this little homemade digital antenna I've had up for 3 or 4 years. You don't aim right at it. It's offset and just all kind of goofy. I can get all the Columbia television stations except 10. I can get all the Augusta stations, but I have trouble getting 37 miles a consistent signal all the time out of the Greenville area. And I hit 7 maybe once a week. I don't get much out of that area, but I think it's because they direct their signal into western North Carolina. I used to get 13 all the time. And what's unusual, I can get Channel 33, their PBS channel. But I can't get 13 over the air.
See, how portable. What you're talking about very well could be. I know when all these first responders leaving analog going digital, like they're up at a place like where I'm at up here in Vixen County, you can tell them they're making a mistake. But they...
For
for a second. Go ahead, comment.
So remember that after the transition to digital, a lot of the channel numbers, the physical and virtual channel number no longer bear any resemblance to each other. A lot of channels switch frequency. Channel 4, WYFF, in fact, is on channel 30, which is in the, you know, middle to lower UHF spectrum. Doesn't propagate the same through the mountains. Channel 13, on the other hand, which comes in from somewhere near Asheville, that works fine. Channel 7 used to work fine. They moved it to channel 11, so that one's gotten wonky. So part of the reason why your local channels suddenly suck is they may have switched to a part of the band that has lousy propagation, at least over mountains. Other thing you got to understand is digital is very, very intolerant of low signal to noise. You know, I'd rather have an analog picture with some snow in it than have nothing. But, you know, that's just the modulation scheme that the FCC pretty much had to choose, which is not real tolerant of signal to noise. It's not real tolerant of multipath. Of course, around here, you've got nothing but multipath distortion, you know, where the signal bounces off of something else and you get the direct signal and the reflected signal. So, it's just a mess with digital. When it's good, it's very, very, very good. It works far better than cable ever or satellite or anything else ever did. You get a much better picture than with either of those. You know, it's one of those things that works very, very, very well when it works.
You two go ahead and carry on. That pack just went out on me. You and Glenn carry on there. I need to charge. Keep missing for later. So, KI4, LCI4, but y'all carry on about the digital.
Well, we sure do appreciate your input there, dude. In fact, you're coming in the best, yeah, all this night. So go ahead and put a charge on it and get back with us when you can. Good to hear from you. Yeah, the weird part is that I can get Charlotte stations, which are flying over the top of Spartanburg, but I can't get Spartanburg. So I can get signals on a regular basis from 346, and then they got another little single channel deal, like 55. And I get them more often than I do 7 in the basic geographical same direction.
That as well. I was getting a Channel 3, some CBS affiliate out of, I think, Charlotte. What channel it's really on, I don't know. But I was getting that more easily than I was getting channels, you know, stations closer to me. For a time, I was even getting some channel from Atlanta. And, I don't know, theoretically not supposed to work this way for VHF and UHF, but I think they go long at night. They almost act like HF at times. When I lived in the Florida Keys, I would regularly pick up this station from the Tampa Bay area on a UHF channel, whereas channels from Miami or for Lauderdale, you know, 200 miles closer, 100 miles closer, yeah, forget about that. But the one Tampa Bay area station came in. So, you know, TV is funny as well. RF propagation is funny generally. I think it works in ways that even Maxwell couldn't figure out. So, you know, a lot of it is digital versus analog. A lot of the stations that were on VHF switched to UHF, or sometimes the other way around. And now you've got the next-gen TV, ATSC 3.0. There's actually one station near here broadcasting back basically the Ultra HD signal, but I guess we're going to have to wait to get a new TV tuner to pick that up.
UHD. I don't think I'll be buying a new TV to get UHD over the air, especially if it's going to take four times the bandwidth to get one quarter of the distance. Yeah, you mentioned about HF. I used to, about once a month, get Channel 2 out of Greensboro. I mean, how weird is that? And I have, but here's the thing. I get every cotton picking ETV channel from Rock Hill. Of course, I get Greenwood. It's over my closest, 38. But I get Columbia, I get Greenwood, I get Rock Hill. Why is it the government's, and of course, it's all the same programming. And then I get the one out of, it's now UNC, it's not UNC ETV anymore in North Carolina, it's PBS North Carolina. I get that, like, the best signal of all. I mean, it has to be a maelstrom outside for me to lose that signal.
I'd like to have at least one more NBC or CBS or ABC affiliate. On the other hand, the public TV affiliates, I've got three of them. 29, 38, 49, 33. 49 and 29, I think, are the same channel with different virtual channel numbers, but there's at least two or three of them that all carry the same programming. So I get three of those, but I'd like to have another CBS affiliate, or, you know, NBC, or whichever one Channel 4 and or Channel 7 and Channel 13 was. Yeah, it's just funny the way that works out. And, yeah, no, I guess it's the ATSC 3.0. Well, I don't know about four times the bandwidth. You might increase the picture resolution. You might resolution, and it might only be twice the bandwidth. You got to remember you're dealing with signal compression. So the ATSC 3 standard supposedly is out there. You know, supposedly get another TV tuner. And the other thing about that, too, is, you know, they'll be able to carry, the signal's compressed more, they'll be able to carry more program streams, something like 8 or 10 of them. So, yeah, if you ever get a new television tuner, it's, I forget what it is. It's probably not more than 10 or 20 miles from where I am here in Grey Court. The FCC isn't forcing everyone to switch right away, again, like they were before. So it's not like your old television signal is going to go away.
Roger that. Well, I tell you, there used to be a sweet deal if you had a big old dish. Well, actually, you could get away with a 1 meter dish, not the direct TV size, but the bigger one, at least a meter. It was free and in the clear, the uplink and downlink for all the television channels, so they could be packaged wherever you wanted them to be, you know, for their local package. So I could get everything. Well, since then, they put another kind of scrambler on it. It's not Nagravision, starting with an N. That's the basic DirecTV way of scrambling. What I'm doing now is I have an old big dish that's turned at SES1, which is at 101 degrees west. And that is about the highest in the horizon satellite you could get. I'm going to let it drop for a second here. So if there's something on one of the side channels, let's say Channel 4 is getting like MeTV or even some channels that nobody carries in this area, like Heroes and Icons, all part of the Weigel or Weigel broadcasting group out of Chicago, they're digital. But they're the first standard. They're on regular Delta, Vega, Baker, Sierra 1.
the original system. So if you can pick up a $25 receiver and you have one of these big dishes, you can get them in just fine. And they're in the clear, they're just digitized. But it's kind of weird, you know, you're thinking about digital, and I know it's a clear shot, but here you have a 5-watt transponder on a satellite that's 26,500 miles out in space, and I'm getting a perfectly clear picture through a downpour, but I can't get something from 37 miles away, tertiary.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah, this was like more than 30 years ago, probably 40 years ago. People were buying those 2 or 3 meter wide dishes to get the network downlink. Because, you know, the programming has to go from the mothership, let's say the CBS studio in New York City, it's got to go to 100 or 500 CBS affiliates all over the country at the same time. So for a while, people were buying, were doing that to watch the raw network downlink, but the cable companies were also doing the same thing. So it wasn't long before the cable companies started scrambling their signal. Probably some analog scrambling you could easily undo. But yeah, now I still see the dishes. I don't know what people are so much doing with them. They're still useful. There's still programming out there. I just never bothered with it then, so I didn't have much interest in it now. Yeah, I know. How do we get a 5-watt signal from, I don't know, the Voyager 1 probe, or the Voyager 2 probe, and you can't get a signal from 30 miles away? You know, hey, receivers and antennas. Very large antenna, very sensitive receiver. So, you know, I would have these, when I used to participate in these online question and answer forums like Quora, you know, I would have these dumbasses ask me, well, we couldn't have gone to the moon in the 1960s because how did we get the television picture all the way from the moon when I can't get the TV station down the block? You know, all right, well, I'm not going to write a 1,000-word answer on how radio works. But, yeah, gee, isn't that amazing?
There was no pine trees in the way.
Yeah, there's no tree blocking the signal. There's not even any other planets blocking the signal. There's basically nothing blocking the signal. But the signal from the small DirecTV dishes, the small satellite dishes, let's see, half the time the rain would block the signal. Whatever frequency band that is, 23 centimeters, 13 centimeters, whatever it was, yeah, you know, a rain cloud will block the signal.
12 gigahertz, and that was the smallest dish they could get away with to get past the HOAs that says you can't have one of those. And even then, they still block you from having one. Like I said, I've got a 1-meter dish out here that actually had a motor on it. But I never got that. It was called the Seki, which I forgot what all that stands for, abbreviation. But it worked a little while. You could send signals from down the coax, and you could move it just a hair. But now a 1-meter solid dish, and they're offset because you're not actually polar mount aiming directly at the satellite. It's 15 degrees or so above wherever you're aiming. But you can put multiple LMBs on there, and from different points on that dish, you can pick up different satellites. That's why you see a lot of these dishes on the top in the Middle East. They've got like, looks like 6 LMBs on a, like about a meter and a half, you know, not quite a 2-meter dish, but, you know, a solid one. It's just got all these doggone LMBs
some of them twisted to the side. I mean, they literally skew the physically skew the each one to tune it in. But then, I don't know what those transponders are coming off the satellite. Someone said 80 watts, but I find that hard to believe.
I've seen. Well, it would still have to be pointing at something in a geostationary orbit, somewhere above the equator. Otherwise, the dish would have to be moving to track it. But yeah, you know, how do you get some power? How do you get a small signal from that far away? And what could I say? The Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 probe, which I think by now are down to 5 watts, maybe not even that much, and still some kind of useful data is being received. So, antennas. You know, it's not a 12-inch dish that NASA is using. It's 100-foot, whatever it is. So, antennas and receivers.
Roger that. The thing is that what's got smaller is some of the uplink equipment, especially the KU band. And you can get so many channels, especially now that it's relatively cheap. So you can have an uplink on the top of like a Ford Econoline van with a 4-foot dish. And, you know, they rent you so much time, and which is kind of bad when the game runs overtime. All of a sudden, they're going to kick the last field goal, and the picture goes out on your feed. And you don't know what happened, because they booked to 10:30, and the game ran to 10:31. So that's kind of cute. But they're not doing it with a whole lot of power. They used to do Presbyterian games on the KU side of, I'm trying to think, it was 72.0 West. I forgot the name of the satellite, but it was one of the ones that was kind of above this, or just above the horizon for us. Well, maybe not that close, but it was more east. It was about the furthest east satellite we could pick up.
Again, you know, it's not about the power. How did the Apollo missions transmit video from the moon? I don't think the command module had more than 50 watts, if it even had that. Oh no, I'm going to hear another one of those people chime in claiming we never went to the moon. But, yeah, that's another argument I'll get into with someone, I'm sure. I'll look into getting one of those, like, 3-meter wide dishes, the big ones that go on. I'd be curious to play with such a thing. And I'm sure there's plenty of used ones around that if you could physically haul it home, you could probably get it for very little money. And, you know, the KU or KA band or K-band receiver is not a lot of money. Or S-band or whatever the hell band. I don't even know what the various UHF bands are anymore. But they're probably not a lot of money. It'd be worthwhile playing with.
C-band is still up there. That's 4.3 gigahertz in that ballpark. That's where the majority of the stuff is, because KU, even on the big dish, gives you some problems. It's just cheaper for uplinks if you want to do it. Now, when Fox does a race, they have an uplink channel for each and every in-car radio. So they don't even mix it at the racetrack. They send it back to New York or wherever, and when they bring up the audio, they're doing that from net control. So, but given the, you know, we're not stuck with 24 analog channels per satellite anymore, we can literally have thousands, not to mention subcarriers for just audio and whatever, so you can cram a whole bunch on them. But as far as finding a dish, let it drop for a second here. Of them out there, you'll find somebody sitting in the field. The biggest part is the actuator. As long as the dish panels are in fair shape, the perforated ones, get at least a 10-footer.
I mean, if somebody gives you 7.5, you can pick up a lot of stuff with that, but and it's easier to handle. But go ahead and get a 10-footer. I'm trying to think of the company out of Arkansas that made the best. Most of those were spray-painted a real medium primer gray, and they're not the black dishes. But stay away from the fiberglass dishes. People use them for poor man's lily ponds, and sometimes they'll invert them upside down and turn them into covers for a picnic table or a patio or what have you.
In my travels around here locally, yeah, most of them is what you say. Maybe at one time it wasn't used, but now it's a bird bath or whatever they're using it for. Yeah, you know, it might still be interesting. You know, the other thing I wouldn't mind, I'd like to build, well, yeah, I guess you could buy them, but it's probably more fun to build them, is some kind of motorized antenna gear system for using the ham radio satellites, which I think I may have actually heard once. In fact, it might have been one of the stations. It was one of the stations on the International Space Station. You know, I picked up half a sentence, maybe a couple of words, and then that was it, because I guess it was, you know, the antenna suddenly was pointing the wrong way. So that'd be a fun thing to make as a motorized mount for, what is it usually, 70 centimeters and 2 meters for the ham satellite.
Don't they allow you to sign up on a list so you can talk to them for the 10 seconds, or usually it's when they're overhead for about a minute. You can do a QSO with them, so you put it on your log sheet and they put it on theirs. Whoever's kind of screwing off that up in space monitors it, and, you know, and goes howdy doody or whatever. And they say, you know, go right down, talk to the hamsters on the ground kind of thing. I think you can sign up for that.
I had a list of all these frequencies. There's a 143-something megahertz thing, which is a digipeater. There's a regular 2-meter repeater, which is just, you know, it's an automatic repeater station like any other repeater. There is, if someone happens to be near the ham radio when someone's calling it, you know, whether you have to sign up in advance for QSO, I don't know. But, you know, there is a regular 2-meter band, FM, whatever, radio, ham station. As I said, the satellite just happened to be in the right place, and I just happened to pick up like half a sentence, you know, a few words, and then I guess it either finished its pass overhead, or since the antenna can't track it, you know, it just was at the right angle to pick up maybe a few seconds of audio. But I have heard the ISS before, you know, just in passing. I could find out more about that. I'm sure there's a webpage.
Probably a full-time communication, you know, like the NASA channel. There's just one somewhere out there. And as far as picking it up with a satellite, I don't know if you can do it with a standard C and KU band LMB. Now, one thing I looked up on, there was a fellow up in Moore, South Carolina, and I passed by his place, and I saw he had a dish, and I just went up and knocked on his door. And he said, oh, yeah, can you get that thing out of the yard? And I said, well, everything but the pole. You know, you might be able to hang a bird feeder off that, but if you don't mind, what do you want for it? He said, just get rid of it. So he had a 4D TV receiver, which that was an early, it was MPEG 1. It wasn't even MPEG 2 TV standard. But it gave a phenomenal picture. But they had a package with HBO and the locals and everything. But it was a huge receiver, and you still needed a big dish. And the biggest thing was you had to tune it to a certain satellite, and it would download all the information. Well, as time went on, the guy kind of forgot about it, and one day, he said, I fired it up, and I found out that satellite to program it is no longer there. So I said, okay, well, I'll just move it around. He couldn't even move it around. So it's basically a gigantic doorstop right now. Because the satellite, if you don't program it from that satellite, you can't physically move it. So when my old EchoStar IRD integrated receiver with the 36-volt blew the power supply out, because it takes 36 volts optimal power to move the dish, I wound up having to just take a 12-volt car battery and a couple of wires and bumping it back to that SES-1, just trial and error, back and forth to get it back on track. So once I got it that, I just said, okay, it's on SES-1, that's what I want, and that. But he did give me a regular manual servo-controlled LNB feed horn and everything. It had KU and C-band on it. I'm going to let it drop for a second. That is physically better. They make digital ones that you don't need to have all the extra servo control motors and everything. But you can't fine-tune it. It's either plus for vertical, I think, and negative. No, is it plus volt 13 for horizontal and minus 18 for vertical anyway? It does it all through voltage, and that's all cool beans and stuff. But you can't fine-tune it because the old receivers had skew. And this servo motor was nothing but a little physical, you know what I'm talking about, but anybody else ever, it was like a boat rudder. It literally was a little rudder that fit inside the feed horn and could bend the waves back and forth. You just feathered it. And so that's how I was able to pick up a whole lot of stuff. I've got that working. I've got an IRD here that still will do positive and negative. I just got to... where to hunt and peck and find them. And a lot of them are up on the KU side. You just kind of have to, there's some insiders that publish a minute and who's feeding what and whatever, and you still get to hear the mistakes and the cuss words and seeing them, you know, drinking beers behind the desk and all that jolly stuff that, you know, talking to the girlfriends on the phone, it's all up there. And you just don't have to know exactly when to hit it.
It is interesting. I didn't get into this too much at the time. For a while, what was I? And somebody was who at the time was doing something with flow scan television. NASA, I think it was rebroadcasting pictures from one of the Viking probes on slow scan television, maybe on like on 20 meters or something. There's a lot of radio news from like 40 years ago that I'm just remembering now. I haven't been that interested in radio before. Actually, I was a shortwave listening person back in the early 80s, mid-80s. I used to have this one weird, like, FM clock radio or AM clock radio. It's, for some weird reason, the circuitry would pick up, like, a lot of the shortwave stations. You know, then I had to, of course, get better radios to do that. But there's nothing in the shortwave broadcasting arena. There's nothing all that much interesting anymore, unfortunately. It, like all became the Jesus Channel. Like that one religious broadcaster out of Pennsylvania. I've passed the station a couple of times. It like when it's active, it blots out half of 40 meters. So used to be interesting. interesting broadcasting on shortwave, not so interesting now, huh?
I had, I cannot remember the name of that radio. It wasn't a Halicrafters. I had a table radio 2 model, and I had to ground it. I remember what happened to me when I did ground it. I got bit good with it, but metal case from the 50s. And it used to pick up, I would listen to the BBC, World Service. And, of course, different times of the day had to change bands because of the solar deal going on and all that. Well, they dropped all that, and so that took a lot of fun away from it. But this radio actually had the old analog highway patrol bands, which I don't know if anybody uses 43 megahertz, 44 megahertz anymore for much of anything, do they? I have kept up with it.
Maybe from the 1950s, possibly 1940s. Yeah, that used to be, you ever notice why there's a channel, TV channel 2, but there's no channel 1? Yeah, that's what used to be channel 1. It's around 43, 44 megahertz, 42 megahertz. It's old land mobile frequencies now, if it's even that. I don't think anyone is there anymore. They're probably, the local cops probably were on one of those at one time. I've seen some of those nicer old radios too. The ones that had the AM broadcast band, and they would have 3 or 4 shortwave bands. And a lot of times the dials would be labeled with, names of cities. Because generally BBC or Deutsche Welle or Radio Italia or whatever was on this frequency, so they would put the name of the city there. They all use several frequencies during the day as propagation sucks more or less on various bands, and usually not without a lot of warning. You know, you'd hear something like, and now it's time for the BBC News, and then it's gone. So if you didn't know to immediately switch frequency, you know, where the hell they go. But, yeah, it used to be more fun back then. BBC, I used to listen to Voice of America just to listen to what are the Americans telling the rest of the world? They used to have one segment that used to be called the slow news. They called it special English, where they would read it like 10 words a minute. You know, for people who didn't understand, who didn't, non-English speakers. Radio Voice of Russia, back when it used to be Radio Moscow. In the early 80s, they had this guy on the air by the name of Vladimir Posner, who, sounds to me like American. Sounds to me like he's from New York, like he could have lived next door to me. And, it turns out he's from Brooklyn, or Queens, or somewhere. He'd be about 90 years old by now, but he was on the air, with a lot of the Soviet commentary on American life, or whatever it was. Yeah, there was a lot of good old radio stations that are gone now.
Remember when Cuba was trying to block everything, and then they would just blast Radio Free Cuba at night into, what was it, 800, around 8 megahertz or something like that. And I know who you're talking about. Gosh, I hadn't heard Vladimir Posner's name forever, but I remember him, he had a broadcast. And I want to say it was on the early days of cable. It was before Russia Today came on there. And he would go talk about, basically how America was bad, but he would do it in such an American way. You weren't supposed to be offended so much. But, yeah, that's a blast from the past. That's almost like Morton Downey Jr., the first of, even before Phil Donahue, when he was on television.
Yeah, Morton Downey Jr. He had a time television show that I guess went up against all the others, didn't he? I remember it from not that long ago. Yeah, I haven't seen him around either. You know, another one of, I guess, the television equivalent of one of these shock jocks. Or no, maybe more like, what's his name, Jerry Springer, that type of show, where, you know, if there wasn't a fist fight, it was a lousy show.